Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 2, The Ship. Teleplay by Hans Beimler and directed by Kim Friedman. The Ship aired on October 7th, 1996.
The Ship. The titular ship. Not a relationship, but a spaceship. Elise, did you remember the ship?
So I didn't think that I did, but then while watching it, there were a couple of things I did remember. Like, I definitely remembered O'Brien's reaction slash being in denial about Muna's dying or like going to die. And I also remembered that there was like as soon as the changeling showed up, I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. That's why they wanted the ship, the Vorta lady and the Jem'Hadar.
Yeah, there's a like I also remembered most of this episode. Mm-hmm. I think like in my memory, like there's an episode early on in season six that like is very similar ways to this one, where they're shooting on like location and they're probably shooting in the same quarry, to be completely honest, or wherever they are.
Right.
And it's actually like slight spoilers, I guess, but it's kind of like ties back because it's when the show gets more serialized. So it's like it kind of does actually tie in with the titular ship. But yeah, I was like, wait, why aren't they destroying? What do they want to get again? Yeah, I was like, oh, right. And then, like, you know, a scene or two before the changeling reveal, I'm like, it's a changeling, right? Like, yeah. You know, so.
Yeah. I did find that, like, this death of Muniz was really sad for me. He had been a character that they had been showing more and more, like, interacting with O'Brien. Like, it was very clear that O'Brien was his mentor.
Yeah.
And like it just, we'd been seeing his face a lot more. So, you know, O'Brien had taken him under his wing. And so it was really upsetting that he died.
Well, and even like earlier this season, like on Starship Down, like that was a good like Muniz episode.
You mean
right?
Last
that
season?
Was the one where. Right. You're right. We're teasing. On season five now.
Yes.
Correct. Correct. Last
Sorry.
Season.
Who am I if not pedantic? Like.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. And that was also like a similar to like, you know, Muniz being the center of a philosophical disagreement between O'Brien and Worf.
Yeah. When I watched the episode the second time, my mom was watching with me. And as soon as like they were focusing on Muniz, like she hasn't been watching along with us or anything. She goes, wow, we know who's going to die in this episode. And I'm like, Mom, he does die in this episode. I mean, she's seen it all before, but I was very much like,
yeah,
Mom, she knows the tropes.
Well, and it's like, because we had seen him, like, you know, and he was like a named character that we knew and didn't just show up for this episode to, like, you know, die like red shirt style. That's definitely part of why I think it hits harder and has that emotional impact on the audience. Because it's like three other people here die on this mission, right? There's like there's like three in the shuttle, and then there's that other guy who was with the ship for them, and then, you know, when Muniz gets hit, he ends up dying, and it's like, again, it's red shirts. It's like, you know, sad and everything else, but we don't know them, so
yeah,
it doesn't hit
Muniz
the same
isn't
way,
a red
right?
shirt to me. But he like kind of gets treated like one a little bit.
Yeah.
Not that mid-level characters can't die. Like, you know, if someone's going to die on the show, like they're going to make it, you know, not Sisko.
Yeah.
There was a very, very, very minuscule B plot that was really just like, here are the rest of our actors this week. Apparently Bashir had imported some spiders that their venom was going to help with some of Kira's pregnancy symptoms. That's the most asinine thing I ever heard, and I absolutely love it. And allegedly, Quark smuggles something in during those transactions. Like, Bashir, I like when Bashir calls himself an idiot during the scene, because you're like, why did you trust Quark? Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah. I thought that scene was also, like, you know, it was amusing and it was entertaining, but, like, it had all four series regulars that weren't on the mission. So it's like, everyone, you still have to come to work this week, but you're working one day instead of five or whatever, however long it would have been.
That was really funny.
Although it always makes me think about, like, whether, you know, Michael Dorn's in that in one of those scenes, like Worf, or in this case, like Rene Auberjonois as Odo. It's like you're showing up, like, you know, before Dawn and everyone else, like before Sadig has to get there to get into your Odo makeup for one scene.
Well, you know what? It's probably better than having to do it every day of the. Actually, the funny part to me is that I know Renee's directed before, but whenever it's something like this and a bunch of people are only in one scene, it always makes you think one of the actors was the director that week, although that is not the case this time.
Yeah.
I had put in the notes, "What's love without danger?" from the scene, but I already don't remember who said that or what it was in reference to.
I think it's because the whatever's illegal that Quark, like, brings in with the ants, like, an or the bugs or whatever.
Or something?
Yeah, but it also could be poisonous or something like that. I think that's what it was.
Kinky.
Right? Exactly.
So just to set us up for the main plot of this episode, because that was really... I don't even want to call that a B plot. Like, it was barely... There was no plot. It was just, like, a quip. Our friends are out surveying a planet. I don't remember why or what they were looking for. Obviously, that doesn't really matter for what happens. And a Jem'Hadar warship crashes on the planet. And it's fun because we get to see, you know, obviously they go and find the ship and they get to, like, explore the Jem'Hadar ship. And I really enjoyed that because it looks different than a Starfleet ship and it was filmed dark and eerie. And I really enjoyed how it was filmed and how it was a little bit, had, like, horror vibes a little bit in that scene.
I kept thinking of, like, you know, how... much more this episode probably would have been more expensive to produce anyways, because it's mostly, like, a lot of, like, outdoor location shooting, which can be more complex. But, like, not all, this is being the first time we've really seen inside a Jem'Hadar ship. Not only is the first time we've seen it where they had to design it, but everything's upside down. So that had another kind of other, like, you know, logistical challenge where it's like, okay, we're gonna fix the consoles to the ceiling.
But also that the Jem'Hadar, like, were physically upside down as well, which was not how it was, you know, they obviously don't work upside down. That was more of, like, they were trying to figure out why it crashed, because something must have happened. Yeah. And the Jem'Hadar that are on the ship, they didn't die in the crash. They had died prior.
No. Which, before, because the initial, like, dampeners had, which, like, I assume, stopped working. And so.
Exactly, which is why I assume the... at the end the changeling dies because of whatever happened in that scenario, like where he can't hold his shape and etc. Not to get ahead, but we assume you've watched this episode.
And it's I thought that was, like, interesting too, because it's like Star Trek a lot of times tends to, like, hand wave away, like, some of the, like, you know, well, the dangerous aspect, like, space travel is, like, routine, and it's like, okay, we have inertial dampers, so we don't have to worry about, you know, what traveling at this velocity in space would do to a body. And it's like, oh no, like, you know, and they're like, oh no, like, shit could want to happen. I've been watching a lot of, I started a little bit ago, I'm almost caught up to the end of season 4, but I've started watching For All Mankind Apple
That's
TV Plus.
That's on my to watch list for sure.
So, yeah, I've been thinking a lot about, like, you know, the science behind space travel. So I was like, it was very of the moment.
Oh, speaking of science things, and also that are on Apple TV, which For All Mankind was, my parents started watching that new Constellation show that's, like, also space travel-y. It's brand new. Like, the first few episodes dropped last week. I'm very excited for that. I feel like Apple TV Plus or whatever we're calling it. I can't keep all these things straight. they've just been like doing like sci-fi after sci-fi. It's really interesting.
Yeah, because that's what Foundation's
exactly.
on too.
Right? Although I was reading it. I don't watch that, but like obviously Lazi has an Asimov cast podcast where he occasionally talks about, you know, the stories in Foundation. And he has Melissa, our editor, on to talk about the show sometimes. And they just like cut the budget of that show. So like that's kind
of really?
Concerning. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have not watched the Foundation or read it. But yeah, for All Mankind is really of interest to me. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. So the first thought after finding this ship, and like obviously everyone's dead, so they don't feel that there's really like a threat, is that they have to call the Defiant because they want to bring this ship back to study it so they can learn about their enemies. And I thought that was really interesting. And
yeah, the runabout wasn't powerful enough to drag the crash ship out of the like mountain or
yes.
hill or whatever it like fell into.
Yeah,
right?
the tractor. Like I don't know how runabouts work super well, but the Defiance tractor beam would be a lot better for that. It's really funny because I was looking the other day. I keep forgetting to pull out that book I have of the schematics of Deep Space Nine and the Defiant and all the runabouts and stuff, and like. I was looking at it a couple weeks ago and found a page that was talking about something that we had discussed in the episode that week. And I don't remember what it was, but I was like, oh, this would have been so helpful. I keep forgetting that I have that reference. So yeah. Another Demhadar warship shows up on the survey planet, and they've established that like 42 Demhadar and one Vorta had died on the original ship. And the people that show up are like, that's our ship. What are you doing here? And start.
Yep, they arrive in orbit, take out the runabout, start beaming down troops, and shit just gets real really quickly.
Yeah. The crew goes back on the broken ship to try and get it running and also to hide. And we find out that the Defiant is 2.5 days out. So Muniz is shot in this firefight, and we have 2.5 days, apparently, that to keep him alive.
Yeah. Yep. And then we enter the property salvage rights negotiation part of the episode between the Vorta.
You mean the
and
finder's
Sisko.
Keeper's rules?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Kalana is this Vorta lady who is very cute, in my opinion. And she's, as we know, there's always one Vorta to, like, a shit ton of Demhadar peeps on a ship. And so she's like, hey, Sisko. Like, they all seem to know a lot about who's, they know Sisko's name before talking to them. Like, it's kind of creepy, like, how much they know about them. She's basically like, hey, Sisko, hope you're not dead. Let's chat.
I wonder how they knew who was there, you know?
I wonder if they were able to scan something on the runabout. Like, I assume that there's, like, a travel log of, like, who's on board.
Yeah.
That was my thought. I mean, obviously we don't know, but I thought that she was a really good BSer. Like, I definitely didn't trust her because, like, obviously I know how Star Trek works. But I found her to be mm-hmm. very convincing as, like, an innocent person. And obviously Sisko knows how Star Trek works as well, so he wasn't fooled. But I do think that she was the calmest negotiator that I have ever seen. And, like, this lady should be negotiating mm-hmm. people's divorces or something. Like, she was just mad chill.
Yeah. Yeah, that idea of, like, trying to build, like, rapport, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and, like, there's an interesting vibe here because nobody's trusting each other in this scenario. And,
mm-hmm.
like, she wants the ship, he wants the ship. Or, like, she finally says, like, there's something on the ship we want. Can you mm-hmm. please let us go get it? And Sisko's like, we will give it to you if you just tell us what it is, you know? mm-hmm. we know that it's the changeling because we have seen it and Sisko and our friends have not. Like, there's a little bit of a blip where you kind of see the changeling. at one point, but like no one else is in that room, so like the audience knows a little bit before Sisko knows. Whatever it is, and obviously we know, but Sisko doesn't. It's important enough that the Jem'Hadar are not damaging their broken down ship. Like, they don't want to damage the ship because they don't want to kill the changeling. And so Sisko is like, we need to find out what they want. So they're like looking around the ship for all the possibilities.
Well, and like Worf just pulls that thing out that he has.
That was like, let's so try this. Funny. Like probably pulling it like, out of its power supply or whatever.
Yeah, right. This is like, I think, like in a lot of ways for me, this episode is like DS9, like at its best. Like it's not, it has a plot. It's an interesting plot. The mystery of, you know, the why the Jem'Hadar aren't just, you know, nuking the ship and the feds from like orbit. But like most of the drama is with the characters, right? Yeah. It's that sense of like things closing in as they start to come unhinged when the shelling starts. Obviously, and we can maybe get into this a little bit now, the idea of like Munez, you know, is a casualty in the firefight, and basically they're trying to keep him alive long enough for the Defiant to arrive. And spoiler, it doesn't happen. But then how differently Worf and O'Brien approach that, like really the drama is like this, those character moments, and even like when Worf gets mad at Jadzia for kind of like teasing him for ripping the thing out or whatever.
Jadzia was annoying everyone this week, not me of course, but like I felt I was really interested in like, I mean, that is another conversation that I want to have after we talk about the O'Brien and Worf stuff, because Jadzia was like really snippy this episode, and I have feelings about it. I think when I say that O'Brien's like in denial, like I know he knows that Munez is going to die, but like he really won't let Munez know that, and that's where the argument happens between Worf and O'Brien. Worf wants to let Munez prepare for death, and in a way I actually kind of am on Worf's side here, actually. I think I agree with him a little bit more than O'Brien. I think it could have, I don't mean like I think it would have been a good idea to put him out of his misery, because I'm not commenting on that, because I may think that's a better idea, but that's not like the point of what I'm trying to say. I think letting Nunez like say goodbye to his family, you know, like they all have like equipment that he can make a little like Tasha Yar video for everyone. or something like that. Like I feel like letting him finalize things in his life would have been really nice. And O'Brien's just like, O'Brien comes off here as like kind of I know he's not like this, but like kind of like one of those like religious people that's just like, oh, we'll pray and everything will be fine. And I know that's not like what he's doing, but he's, but by not denying that it's fatal, it feels very much like just trying to, I don't know. It was hard for me to know if O'Brien was pretending for himself or for Munez really deep down.
I mean, it's probably a bit of both. Yeah, but I like, that's and weird. I like, I think like deep down Miles knows the score. I like, for me, it's like that active choice to like choose hope, like, you know, like the 10% chance versus like the 90%, to get, I guess, a little bit more like, you know, complicated, like, you know, ethical mathematics of it all. It's like this episode didn't really touch on any ideas of like rationing issues or, you know, like resources and different that way, where it's like, does it make like, it's,
what did they eat for 2.5 days? Like,
like
there's probably again, no I don't whatever, know unless they like secretly have replicators on this Jem'Hadar ship or whatever.
Like at the end of the day it doesn't super matter, but it's like that
was if, there like, water resources on were this tight planet.
And they started if they started having to ration, it's like, I mean, this is probably going to die anyway. Like that would have made it even more complicated. Yeah, you know fair. What I'm saying?
There's a lot of bickering in this episode, and I don't mean that in an insulting way, because I feel that everyone is on edge because of what's happening. Sisko has to break up a fight between O'Brien and Worf. Like, that's how heated this is getting. And Sisko basically yells at everybody, and then, of course, Dax makes, a comment, and he yells at her, too. But I do think that I agree with Worf, and I do think that a lot of the Klingon rituals around death and dying are very interesting to me, and there's part of it that feels very Jewish to me. More on that later when we get into the end of the last scene of the episode. But I think that Klingons are obviously a bit more direct and straightforward than humans, and at least with regards to this. And I think that is something that I appreciate.
Are they, in some ways, yes, but also there's, like we learned last week. No, what we did learn is that there is, different layers where it's, you slap someone on which side of the hand, what that means, and kind right. of the different things there when Worf was teaching them how to be Klingon, but, yeah.
I just mean on specifically the with whole... regarding death and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, fair. Yeah. Fair.
So after the negotiations end and, our buddies have our little physical fight for a few minutes. Sisko's like, all right, we just need to find out what they're searching for so that we can either give it to them or use it to our advantage. Worf rips out that computer console, as you mentioned. Dax is extremely irritable and sarcastic to everyone, which I think is interesting. She's just getting... I don't think we've seen much of the side of her where she's getting very frustrated. I feel like we've only seen her act this way when it was in relation to her Klingon buddies. And I think her character is very grounded most of the time. But when something's really serious, I think she has a tendency to make jokes about things that other people are not finding funny, and I'm obsessed with this only because it feels very similar to how I react to things. When things are really bad, I become extremely sarcastic and make inappropriate jokes, and it feels very much how Dax is acting in this episode.
Yeah, I don't know if we've ever really seen her under this kind of level of stress, right? And that's how she is trying to cope, yes. Right?
It just felt very relatable to me. I agree with Sisko that it probably wasn't the right time, but I still would have made the same comments if I was her, I think.
Yeah.
It's really awful when they find... They think that they're going to, get the ship working, and they all, work to do it, and then Moonis dies without anyone even realizing.
Yeah.
Because up until now, someone has stayed with him, And I think it's been best that it has been Sisko for the most part, because Dax, Worf, and O'Brien are all very capable of doing their jobs. And he knows that. And so the captain is going to be the best person to stay with the person that's dying, I think.
Yeah. That's, I think the biggest kind of tragedy for me of the episode, that, he essentially, after all of the, tension and will he make it, won't he make it, approaches of O'Brien and Worf that we were just talking about, dies alone.
Yeah,
no one even realized it.
Yeah, it really, that's kind of, I teared up a little bit when that happened.
Yeah, I wanted to run something by you, the whole kind of standoff of the for lack of a better words, kind of political impasse in about the salvage rights of the ship and all of this stuff that Kalana and Sisko are into. It's kind of giving Cold War, spy thriller, Sisko could be Jack Ryan in this situation. Agree or disagree?
I think that is actually pretty on point. I'm thinking specifically of The Sum of All Fears, which is the Ben Affleck, Jack Ryan film that people do not like. I very much like that movie, and it's very interesting. It's not the same plot. Like, obviously, Jack Ryan uncovers that someone, some third group is trying to make America and Russia be in a war together. And I think it just feels, like, very back-channel-y and, like, how you're, you know, like, kind of having to work with the enemy a little bit to fix things. So I definitely agree.
This is, you know, a tangent, but I'm like, because I haven't seen some, we watched some of All Fears in a really long time, but I've never seen the, was it Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit, the Chris Pine Jack Ryan movie? It's like, I wonder which one people, I wonder if that that one's worse.
Oh, yeah, no, Shadow Recruit is definitely worse. So this is actually really funny. It's only going to be funny to me, but I have been organizing, not that kind of organizing, movie watches with some of my friends, and it's always like action movie themed. And like right now we're doing Angelina Jolie. So we watched Mr. and Mrs. Smith recently in preparation for the new show that's out. And then today we're watching Lara Croft Tomb Raider, but the first marathon, or not marathon, but the first, I guess, I don't know what I would call it. The first grouping of movies we watched were all the Jack Ryan films. So yeah, Shadow Recruit, that was my first time watching Shadow Recruit, and it was fine, but yeah, it was definitely not like some of All Fears is better. I think it's a more interesting story.
The wildest thing about Shadow Recruit, thing about Shadow Recruit to me is that, isn't that a Kenneth Branagh joint?
It might be, let me see. Did you see his, like, yeah, he did direct it. Did you see his, like, epic beard yesterday?
Oh, at the SAGs? Yeah. No.
It was a pretty great beard. Also, Pedro Pascal gave the sweetest drunk speech ever after winning Best Male Actor in a drama series.
He totally was expecting to lose to, like, Kieran Culkin again.
He was like, I'm drunk. Yeah. I did not expect to be up here. I actually watched it, like, right before we started recording.
Yeah, I'm a little drunk. I thought I could get a little drunk.
I love that he's like, I'm about to have a panic attack. I'm leaving. Pedro, you are all of us. So, back to Star Trek Deep Space Nine. The changeling finally shows himself or herself or itself. I don't know the correct pronoun for a changeling that has not shown me what they want to be. So I'm going to just say themselves. Changelings are all non-binary until they say otherwise, I think.
Yeah, I've been actually thinking about this a lot since the season four finale, and the idea that, like, the face of the, like, founders is a character that has no name. They just refer to her as, like, the female changeling. Mm-hmm. And, like, in light of, like, you know, the idea of, like, yes, like, Odo's pronouns are he, him, because he does gender in a very, like, mask sort of cop way.
Yep.
Right? But it's just, like, the difference between, like, gender and biological sex, but they're sexless, and the idea of, like, how we refer to the so-called female changeling, and it's just, yeah, there are layers there, and, like, there'd be something really interesting to dive into, the idea of the performance of gender and the founders the changelings.
Which is funny because, I mean, no one...
Literally, gender fluidity, because right? They're fluid.
Like, no one is more manipulative than the female changeling leader. And I think that that is really funny or interesting because people societally try to act... They try to show women as villains for being manipulative. So it is interesting that they kind of, like, went with that. You know, like, this guy is a badass cop. I mean, that's not me saying that, but, like, this woman is a manipulative bitch. Like, it just feels very funny. Like, I'm not, like, angry at the show. I just think it's funny that, like, they gave her these, like, stereotypical, like, bad female traits.
I mean, and on the other hand, she's Margaret Thatcher, and Thatcher was evil as well. So, you know.
I'm not saying it's not somewhat based in reality.
No. I'm just thinking, I think.
I'm going to move to a country just because the female changeling is in charge, and it'll be like, yay, feminism.
Moving on, as I shudder internally because I know who you're referencing. excuse me.
We're bitchy. Sorry. Not sorry.
I do think that idea of like the portrayal of the so-called female changeling. Let's put a pin in that for now, but let's go back to it. I'm especially thinking there's those. Again, not to tease you all for something that doesn't happen for a whole other season, but it'll be interesting to track like her relationship and dynamic with Odo in light of what you said in terms of like the gendering and like Lady Macbeth of like characteristics. Although Lady Macbeth is also interesting because like in her first scene, she like says unsex me. and the idea to like do more. Anyways, yeah, there's lots of different vectors of analysis here.
I love it. I love analysis of things and vectors. Yay, vectors.
Vector meal replacements. All right. Do you guys have that done? Or is that's not a just Canadian cereal, is it?
I have. Vector? I don't know what that is.
Okay. Then maybe it's just up here. All right. So the changeling dies, and right after it dies, Kelana shows up, and she's like, can I take all the Jem'Hadar killed themselves?
Which Dax like confirms also. I do appreciate that Dax is like, I just checked, she's not lying.
they had a line to cover that, but not, you know, what they're fucking eating for 3 days.
Before we like go further, I do want to say that hearing the changeling like whimper and cry out as it died was like really upsetting. Now I'm just calling it it. Like, I'm a horrible non-binary person. But yeah,
you're allowed to. I'm not.
that's your
people's pronoun to use, not mine.
Fair. But seriously, like,
actually, it's not a pronoun, but you know.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Some people like it to be their pronoun. But yeah, so I.
You should go as Cousinette for Halloween once.
My hair is not long enough.
Non-binary icon, Cousinette.
I just trimmed my hair on Friday, so it's like not long enough for that. I guess I could put a wig on. But yeah, just listening to... I feel like
Benny should have put a wig on.
Yeah. Wow. I think what made it worse, hearing the changeling like cry out and die, was like watching the Vorta and Jem'Hadar hearing it, because you know how much they care about the changelings. I mean, their god was dying, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sisko, like, and this is the real tragedy. And this is what feels like, you know, the kind of like Cold War sort of like between the Dominion and the Federation. And it's like just the lack of trust and like willingness to like put things out there. And it's like how many people died, or like the changeling could have like been saved and lived. And like that there could have like... This wasn't a zero-sum game. It's like there could have been benefits to everyone. Everyone could have gotten what they wanted. And more people, including Jem'Hadar, would be alive. And
you could it say just didn't end up that way. Not being a zero-sum game, it was the sum of all fears. Mm. That was real corny. But I like, instead of... I'm joking, but I'm like, instead of listening to what you said, I was like workshopping that joke in my mind.
Yeah, you know, it's all good. It's all good.
I heard what you were saying. But yeah, everyone's kind of not taking each other, not trusting. You know, Kelana thinks that if they tell him about the changeling, that they'll kill the changeling sooner. And there's really no way for Kelana to know otherwise, honestly. Sisko does feel that everyone's died for no reason, because he would have just given them the ship. He would have just let them take the changeling, and they really just wanted the ship. But at the same time, like, that's not how it went down, and so we don't really know what would have happened.
Yeah.
Kelana asks to leave with some of the changeling's remains, before leaving and letting them keep the Jem'Hadar ship to be studied. I mean, she's on her own now, so I don't think she has any physical, like, leg to stand on to overtake, you know, to take the ship back or anything like that. And all of our friends kind of feel shitty about what happened. I really liked the scene where Dax comes into Sisko when they're back at the station and was like, you know, what did Starfleet say? And he was like, well, they're giving us all medals. They're thrilled. And it'd be like that sometimes. Something real shitty happened, but like you got all of this extra knowledge out of it, I guess. And I do think it's interesting that Dax takes a stand here and says that she thinks that it was all worth it. And Sisko admits that he would do it again, but it's still not easy to lose people under your command. I do like that he asks her, do you remember, you know, whatever teacher from that, like, morality and ethics of command class back at the academy? And it really, even though they weren't obviously in school together, it made the show feel so, like, worldly to me, because, like, the fact that these two different age people, like, had the same professor at the academy for this one class, and he talks about how it's hard to separate his feelings. And I appreciate that Dax is like, basically, well, maybe it's not supposed to be easy.
Yeah.
While reminding him that everyone that died, you know, volunteered for Starfleet and were proud to wear their uniforms and knew what they were signing themselves up for.
Well, and the way that dovetailed and like tied back into the last scene with Kalana, where she asked Sisko if like he had any gods, and he's like, I have things I believe in, and she's like, duty. And then to have this conversation later, it's just like, yeah, ooh, heavy shit.
Yeah. And then,
like, what do we ascribe meaning to? Like, what do we give power? Like, what do we hold?
Yep.
What truths do we hold to be self-evident?
At the end, at the very last bit of the episode, O'Brien is sitting next to Munis's space casket or whatever. And Worf's like, oh, you're doing Akvo, which, like, to me, I'm like, yeah, to be fair, I'm very well aware that Shiva happens usually after burial, but, like, they're not in a place where this guy can get buried anytime soon. So he's sitting with his friend, and Worf comes in and explains that that is a Klingon tradition to scare away any predators that may stop the body from, or stop the spirit from going to Stovacor. And it all just feels, even my mom was like, this is very Jewish. And I just really liked that. So then we started talking about Worf's adoptive parents and how I think they're Jewish coded. And I think my mom had convinced herself that there was like on the page. And I'm like, they never come out and say it, but she agreed with me, but she had thought it had been like said. And I'm like, I was like, they never came out and said it, but it's like pretty clear. So I feel like the Klingons have a lot of Jewish traditions, and also Worf, you know, has adopted Jewish parents, adoptive Jewish parents. So I just really liked that. This episode was really heavy.
Sorry, I'm just like, it was, and like my silence was about like you talk like compare like you talking about the similarities between Jewishness and Klingonness, and the way in which the like ritual and the and like a community and like, you know, like the way that they intertwine with like ritual, the way ritual intertwines with identity to the point that like it's hard to uncouple them sometimes.
Yeah.
And again, Worf would have to go on a whole like process, and he kind of does at various points of like, you know, whether he's like ethnically Klingon not practicing.
I also felt like the whole argument between O'Brien and Worf earlier in the episode felt very like, not necessarily that Worf was like giving a Jewish perspective, because I don't think that that is really the case, but I felt like the way that O'Brien was talking about Worf views on it was like, okay, that felt very Christian to me. Like, we don't, you know, like it reminded me of this. When I was younger, I worked at this company and this guy had been in a coma for like a really long time.
Was this in Arizona? Or
was this was in New Jersey before I moved to Arizona. And they were a Catholic. And like, I think that they kept this kid, like I say kid because he was either my age or younger. I feel like they kept him plugged in for like a year at least, like in the hospital. And it just felt very like, I don't know every Jewish person, but like I can't imagine any Jewish person I know doing that.
Yeah.
I don't actually know what ended up happening with that. But like, it was very much like I feel like keeping people like, I don't know. I don't really know what I'm saying.
I mean, that's not, no, it's not. It comes down to the question of like, what is living and what does it mean to be alive?
Yeah. Well, right? Like, which like, comes,
is it is it like technologically assisted biological functions?
Which actually exactly. And it makes me think about the recent things that are going on in my country, like in Alabama, where they were voting on when like a fetus is like a baby or whatever. Which, you know, is something that should be fucking voted on, like, to start with, is fucking ridiculous. But, like, in Judaism, it's a baby once it takes its first breath. So, like, once its head leaves the like, birth canal and takes its first breath, that's when it becomes a baby. So it's, like, very interesting that the way things are being talked about is very Christian.
Yeah.
That's just something I've been thinking about that is not really related to this, but it was on my mind.
No. It's not related.
Yeah, like, I mean, think, that's fair, but it's my podcast. I could say what I want, right? Right.
100%.
Now that we've talked about fetuses.
I was going to say, speaking of talking about whatever we want, now it's time for the Alter Water Thirst Quencher. Alter Water first being mentioned in the context of Star Trek in Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock. Also, a possible reference to Alta from Altair 4 in Forbidden Planet, also known as Space the Tempest.
Yes.
Elise, it's literally the tip, like, is. And which is, that's why for like Forbidden Planet kind of is like proto Star Trek for a lot of reasons, but the fact that they like literally just rip off Shakespeare like also feels very Star Trek.
I've been trying to get Laz to watch Forbidden Planet, and I might not have told him the Tempest part, and I feel like I need to use that. Like, that might get him to watch it faster. Actually,
you're like, Lazzy, it's the Tempest with a famous movie robot that makes bourbon.
I watched the other movie with Robbie the Robot, where like a kid like gets hit. It like is like some evil shit happens, and it was not good, but I had a great time. I forget what it was called. Nice. Something Boy, The Lost Boy or something. It's not like,
sorry,
I was just gonna say, like, it's not a sequel to Forbidden Planet. They just wanted to have Robbie the Robot in like a different story and was like, we'll just do this.
Yeah, not fair. But any conversation I have about Forbidden Planet would also be remiss if I didn't mention how much the score is hella ahead of its time.
Isn't it? I should also say that it has Leslie Nielsen in it, and that is very exciting.
It's still so weird to see him, like, play it straight. Yeah. Like to be just, like, a classic, like, hero, because that was before he, like, got into comedy.
Yes. He's very attractive in it, too.
Totally. All right, who are you thirsting for this week?
Besides Leslie Nielsen in Forbidden Planet, I am thirsting for a hot Vorta lady who is very hot.
Yeah, I think I like texted you or put like in our like the one channel in Discord that like Vorta hot. I think was all the two words were, and it's like, I don't know if we've ever met a non-hot Vorta, to be honest.
Yeah.
And maybe the founders designed them that way so red-blooded humans and other alien species like us would be put on our back heels. We're like, oh, I can't negotiate with this person. Look at her earrings.
I also think it's really funny.
They managed to make earrings work in those ears. Wow.
I do think it's really funny that her hair is almost exactly like Wei-Yun's, just like she has like the bottom part too. It's really funny.
Yeah.
She was also in Star Trek Voyager, I think, as a not Not the same role, but, like, in general.
Yeah, the same actor.
Oh, she was also in Beverly Hills 90210, Murder, She Wrote. Everyone's in Murder, She Wrote. But I need to know. Hold on. I'm, like, on the Wikipedia, and I meant to go to the IMDb page, because that will be better. Okay. So, in Star Trek Voyager, she plays, in one episode... In one episode of Star Trek Voyager, she plays a character named Dala. I don't really know who that is. It's in season 6. And then in Murder, She Wrote... Oh. Someone... I don't know who she played in Murder, She Wrote. But she was in Murder, She Wrote and Beverly Hills 90210 at the same time. And she was in season 5 Beverly Hills 90210, an episode called Intervention. And I think... I remember that they were giving maybe Brian Austin Green's character an intervention, but I'm not entirely sure. David.
Working for the church while your family dies.
What the fuck is that?
Intervention by Arcade Fire.
Oh, I don't know their songs.
All the sparks of friendship and love will die without a home. Hear the soldier groan, we'll go on it alone. All right. Elise, what is your candidate for most Star Trek thing?
Probably having the dying patient make jokes to lighten the mood. Like, nurses are all thumbs. I've known prettier roles. Like, having the, like, jokey patient feels maybe just more, like, television trope in general to, like, tropey. Lighten the mood.
Yeah.
Did you have anything?
And I guess my candidate for most Star Trek thing would be more of a Deep Space Nine thing. We destroyed another runabout.
Yes. I don't even remember the name of what this one was. I don't know if we even found out.
All right. Until next time, Elise, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
Yes, you can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendy. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or a Z, as well as anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Great. And you can find me on Letterboxd and Blue Sky at Maddie Hugh, MattyHugh. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at @podrace, and you can also email us at podrace@gmail.com. Please remember to rate and review us on the podcasting system of your choice. Wait, that's Elise's line.
I was
sorry.
Like, gonna just let you go for it if you wanted to. Please remember to rate and review us on the podcast. See, I can't even do it now. Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, go fuck yourself, San Diego. Computer, end program.
Wait, what did San Diego do?
It's an Anchorman where he reads anything on the teleprompter that's in front of him.
Oh.
And so they sabotage him by making him say that because he's in San Diego and everyone's like, fuck you, Ron Burgundy, after that. Oh, and because it. I just read your line because it was in front of me, I was referencing Anchorman. And we're going to leave this explanation in because that makes this even funnier.
Yeah. Bye.